Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 Central on CBS.
Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at JustAskVi. That's VI.com.
Investment advice provided on the following program is on an individual basis. Listeners should not consider today's discussion as a recommendation for any investment and should carefully evaluate before investing. This is your Real Estate Today on News Talk 1110 WBT.
Hello and welcome to the show, Your Real Estate Today. Happy Saturday. Yes. It is true. We are live today. Thank you all for being with us, and I am so glad to see the blue skies and north of 50 degree weather. So excited to be with you all today. And of course, when we're live, we have the luxury of being able to take your calls. So we hope you do. If you're a first-time listener or even a long-time listener, we'd love to hear from you. This show is about real estate. Anything having to do with it from a legal perspective, we got Josh Lippick here from Costner Law Firm. Josh, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Glad to have you. As well as myself, I am the owner of the Jameson Companies Realty Property Management and Property Investment. We are glad that you're with us. So if you have a question about real estate, a legal question about real estate, anything having to do with your home, whether you're buying, selling, investing, or something going on in the neighborhood, we'd love to hear from you. 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Don't be shy. Pick up the phone. That's why we're here. Yes, we have lots to talk about, but also I know you've got a question. And we're excited to have the opportunity to hear it from you, because if you're thinking it, I know there are multiple people out there that are thinking it as well. So let me start out, as I always do, with some things that I learned this week. Now, I was in Dallas last week for a conference, and I got some national statistics that I found pretty fascinating. But before I go into those, I'm just going to tell you, Dallas is a pretty cool place. I was surprised.
Except for the Cowboys.
Yeah, well, I like the Cowboys. So I've liked the Cowboys since I was a kid. So I actually enjoyed that. But it was a neat place. And if you ever have a chance to go to Dallas, it's a nice, clean place and a good place to hang out. So what did I learn this week? 71% of buyers, 71% of buyers use their mobile phones to search online. It is the primary way people buy. Boy, has that changed. Affordability. Now, there's this thing called the Affordability Index. The Affordability Index is kind of what it says. The buyer's opportunity based on average incomes to be able to afford a home. Right? So the Affordability Index right now means more than appreciation on homes in our marketplace. Let me explain what I mean. It is a seller's market right now. Everybody knows that in our area. It is a place where the seller actually carries the trump card and homes are appreciating at a good rate. However, we're in a very low interest rate environment. And as we're in a low interest rate environment, it keeps things in the affordability index lower because the cost of money is cheaper, even though the cost of houses is going up. So As long as rates drop, as they have in the last few months, it keeps everything in check. If interest rates start to go up where we've got pricing right now, that's where we're going to run into trouble. So for about the next year and a half to almost 2 years, economic indicators say we're going to be in a good market because they don't plan to make any changes to interest rates. So keep an eye on the affordability index, and every month I give that stat. So stay with us, and we'll keep an eye on that as well. So for every 1% drop in interest rate, it makes a home 10% more affordable. So see what lower rates do? It makes homes more affordable. All right, here's another stat for you. 1 in 10 new homes is going for rental. 1 in 10 new homes is going for rental. 5% of the home starts that are being built are for rental property. Since 2000, new construction is down 47% in homes under $300,000, forcing a more difficult environment for first-time homebuyers. All right, Josh, you have any idea why?
No, I don't.
I'm going to tell you. Two things. Number one, land cost. Land cost is higher than it's ever been. And the second is cost of construction, not just materials, but labor. It's hard to build a house under $300,000 anymore. It really is, because of the cost of those variables. So just keep that in mind. All right, luxury homes, on average, nationally, average days on market is 92, and 9 months of inventory sits on the market right now. So luxury homes is actually a buyer's market. Inventory and mortgage rates are indicators of how the luxury market will continue. We just need to keep an eye on it. 89% of the time buyers and sellers buy a home or sell a home, they use a realtor. 89% of the time they use a realtor. The number one way they find that realtor, 41% of the time, it is because someone else gave a referral of their existing real estate agent. I love that. All right. What buyers and sellers want, according to a national poll, I feel like a pollster today. More than experience is representation. They want a professional, and they want to be represented. They want somebody advocating for them. So for all you rookie agents out there, experience, and it was defined as knowing what you know and admitting what you don't know. That goes true for us veterans too, right? Even attorneys.
Yeah.
Right? And being able to say, hey, I may not know the answer, but let me get back to you. I'll get you the answer. All right? Here's one that I really paid a lot of attention to. Homeowners are worth 35% more in net worth than a renter. Think about that for a minute. That's pretty interesting. I was pretty pumped when I got back from Dallas. I think the opportunity in Charlotte for the next couple of years is awesome. And two more comments. If you're going to sell, make sure your house is ready. I've been in a lot of houses this past week that could have sold faster. They just weren't ready. Second of all, always do a walkthrough before you close. We're going to talk about some things with Josh about the closing process today. Do a walkthrough before you close. Make sure there hasn't been a water leak or a bunch of garbage left behind. And in negotiation, don't be a jerk. Remember, it's a win-win, and goodwill does mean a lot. All right? So more to come. The show, Your Real Estate Today. Josh Lippick with the Costner Law Firm. Myself, Paul Jamison. Stay with us. We'll be right back on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Welcome back to Show Your Real Estate Today. Paul Jamison, your host, live from the WBT studios here with Josh Lippick with the Costner Law Firm. We are glad you're tuned in today. Now, I know you're out there, so hang with us. Pick up the phone. If you've got a real estate question, don't be shy. We're here to help you. 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. You can either listen to us talking or you can get a question answered, probably, you know, maybe a little of both. So 704-570-1110. All right. Josh, we talked about this morning and then also kind of at the break. Sometimes folks that are not married buy real estate together, and it can be good and bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's actually very common. I had a realtor call me this morning with a question for his clients that are engaged and looking to close on a home next month, but not getting married until later in the year. So it comes up very frequently.
Yeah. So what happens at if for example, how do I put this poetically? There's a change of marital decision.
Yeah. So obviously this is going to be an issue to consider when you have, you know, boyfriends and girlfriends looking to buy a house together, or they're engaged and they're not married yet, because obviously there's no divorce process if they were to break up after going on title together. And it is a little complicated, but there are some options available if you can't agree. Let's say one of you wants to sell the property, the other wants to keep it, and or maybe you can't buy out the other's interest. There is in North Carolina an absolute right to sell property when you have interest in that real estate through what's called a partition action. And it's not an ideal situation because you're not going to have, you know, a talented realtor such as yourself selling the home through a traditional process. It's going to be the court selling the home, and there's going to be court fees and attorney's fees, and the court's going to have their broker's commission as well. But a lot of times that can be used as a sort of a bargaining chip to kind of get everyone on board, where you say, hey, I'm going to do this. It's an absolute right. We can, you know, fare much better if we just agree to sell it. So a lot of times in my experience, I see people eventually, you know, agree to cooperate.
Yeah, I would think that the court way to go not only would be more costly, but it would not optimize the value of the home.
Agreed. Yeah. You know, you see a house being sold through the court system, some buyers might look at that as a distressed property, and you're probably not going to get top dollar. And again, you're not going to have a listing agent, you know, working for you to get the best deal for you.
Yeah. And in a lot of those situations, too, where you have two individuals that are not married, whether by divorce or even by timing, say, or personal decision, they're both on the loan. And just because they may have severed the relationship by marriage doesn't especially mean they've totally severed their responsibility.
That can create some complications as well, especially if you have one party no longer willing to make their payments, because while they might walk away and you can't cover the mortgage on your own, you're still just as liable. Your credit's going to get hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see that a lot, where the one spouse or the other will say, hey, you know, I am not on this title anymore. I've severed my responsibility, but the property has not been refinanced.
Mm-hmm.
They're still on that loan.
Yeah. And yeah, even if they're not on title.
Credit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if the other spouse doesn't make the payment, boom.
Yeah, it's going to hit you both.
Crazy, yeah. Talk about rights to survivorship.
Sure, yeah. And I know we kind of covered, you know, engaged couples and boyfriends and girlfriends, but this could be any situation. You could have two friends buying an investment property together, or it could be you and a relative that's not your spouse. So anyone other than a spouse, when you're buying property together, when you go on title, you really have two options on how to take title. And those options are either as tenants in common mm-hmm. or as joint tenants with rights of survivorship. Mm-hmm. And the main difference there is going to be what happens if one of you were to die while you're both on title. And if you're tenants in common, the person who passes, their interest is going to pass to their heirs. And if you have rights of survivorship, their interest would just pass into the other owner of the property.
Right.
Which would be the default setting if you were married.
Right, right. Pretty much so. You see the tenants in common sometimes when they're some second marriages or things like that where there's prenuptial agreements or other things involved which would complicate a normal tenant's right to survivorship.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, ultimately the decision is going to depend on your situation. Like, again, if it was, you know, two friends buying an investment property, they might want their interest to pass to their heirs and not just go to the other friend who's invested with them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of investment property, hey, John, how are you?
How are you?
Good. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I just had a question about, what does a bank typically require for a down payment if you're looking to buy like an investment property?
About 25% down.
25%. Okay,
yeah.
That's great.
There are a few lenders that that will give you 20, some of the smaller banks, but it's typically 25.
Okay, wonderful. Well, that was an easy answer. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for calling. All right, yeah. Very good. Okay, so I would assume... speaking of investment property, let's kind of stir that up a little bit. If you're married, you know, and it's not just your primary home, it's true for investment property as well. You take title as right of survivorship or tenants in common, depending on how you have your estate and will set up. It's just not for your primary home. Or in a lot of cases, this is something that Costner works with a lot, is estate planning. So being able to do wills and trusts to make sure, like, for example, many times when the breadwinner dies, they'll put the investment property into a trust to protect that property and also provide the continued income for the surviving spouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very common.
Yeah. So... you know, one of the things I wanted people to know was just the fact that you could also, it's not just for your primary home, basically is what I'm saying.
Yeah, this would all apply regardless whether it was an investment property or primary home.
Yeah. So if a piece of property is an estate property, you know, everybody, and there is no surviving spouse, and all of a sudden it gets passed on to the family members, a lot of people have to show up.
Yeah, that's correct. Whether, you know, the will named multiple heirs or whether there wasn't a will in place, and then you have to sort through North Carolina interstate succession laws.
Yeah, you were going to talk a little bit about what happens in that.
Yeah, so when you inherit a portion of the interest in a piece of property, ultimately all the heirs are going to have to sign off on the sale of that property. But really, before you can convey title, even though real estate's not a probate item, you at least need to get that estate set up and run the notice to creditors for at least 4 weeks before you can close on that deal.
Yeah, and notice to creditors for any outstanding work that was performed, any outstanding obligations related to the piece of real estate.
Yeah, and well, really the estate in its entirety, you know, if there's any outstanding medical debts or funeral bills, anything like that.
Awesome. Okay. All right. And so when you talk about the heirs, it's also their spouses as well, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Right. Okay. You know, it's interesting because we even talk about the fact that that ex-spouse has some rights as well. So what do we got, George? 1 minute left, right?
Yeah, about a minute.
About a minute. Golly. How come time goes so fast?
I don't
just
know.
Want to know. So after the break, this was something I wanted to talk about, and I'm going to kind of set this up to force you all to at least consider coming back after the break. How to mess up a closing. You've never had a closing mess up, have you?
Well, we try not to.
No, I mean, for not reasons you've caused. I mean, for reasons that the buyer or seller have caused.
Of course, yeah. We try to avoid having people create those situations. But there's a few different ways you can run into some problems there at the end.
Yeah. I didn't mean that the way that came out. Oh, Josh is a good man. Put up with me today on Saturday. The show, Your Real Estate Today. Paul Jamison here with Josh Lippick from the Costner Law Firm. Stay with us, y'all. We got a lot more to share and hope you do. Hope you enjoy it. Stay with us. Here we are on Saturday afternoon. The show, Your Real Estate Today. Paul Jamison, your host from the WBT Studios. I'm with the Jamison family of companies. That's real estate, property management, and investment here with Josh Lippick with the Costner Law Firm. You're welcome to call in. If you have any questions related to real estate, give us a call, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. All right. I know it's a beautiful day and we're enjoying it, so if you're out tooling around, sit back and relax. We're going to tell you how not to mess up a closing, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of times we see the lenders pull credit the day of or the day before closing. So I'm all constantly telling my buyers, don't go out and sign up for 90 days same as cash or go out and put a bunch of stuff on your credit cards and things like that. We've had closings actually falter because of the ratios being out of whack. Have you had that ever happen where you've come to a closing and then all of a sudden something has happened and the loan has been held up until they source the funds?
We've had it almost happen. I think most lenders are pretty good about letting their clients know that there are certain things that they really shouldn't do during that loan process to mess things up there right at the end. And some of them are more obvious, like buying a car or taking out another loan. But some of them, people may not realize it could be something small like signing up for a Macy's credit card because you got 20% off on your $30 swimsuit. I mean, that could do it.
That's exactly right. That's new credit. And you had mentioned an example. Sometimes people will take out a new loan, like those 90 days same as cash. That's a loan.
Mm-hmm.
Right before they close.
Yeah.
And that's stuff that's going to be a problem.
And even if it doesn't really affect your ability to obtain the financing, they still have to submit everything back through underwriting. So if you're at the closing table and you find this out, they're going to have to rework your file. You're not going to close today.
And it isn't going to happen that day. You're exactly right. How often do you come across there's an old loan that hasn't been released and the attorney's not even alive anymore? Or not in business?
Not too regularly, but it does happen often enough to have come across it a few times, especially when you're dealing with loans that were taken out prior to the market crash in 2008. A lot of those smaller banks especially went out of business, and sometimes getting payoffs or cancellations for those old loans can be a little difficult.
Yeah. There's a service I think you guys have, like a research service or something that helps remedy that situation, right?
Require, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go out and search those old loans and find them and help you get them canceled. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, and that's another reason why it's really important when you're a seller, when you get that request from the closing attorney's office for your information, that you get that in as soon as possible so that we can start vetting those things should they come up.
Right. We were speaking about divorce before, David. You had a question related to divorce, yes?
Yeah, I sold the house to a gentleman who was married at the time. I sold it to him, and I had told him that I sold them to him and his wife, although he did not quite understand that. And of course, he got divorced, and I still have the note. And I am in the process of trying to foreclose on him and the note.
Mm.
The question I have is, do I have to foreclose on both he and his wife?
Hmm. Was she on the note also?
She was not on the note. according to the county. But I think legally she is on the note, but that's why I'm asking you.
Well, is this in North Carolina?
This is in North Carolina.
Okay, and you said that they have divorced?
They have divorced, except, and in fact, she waived her rights, but from my understanding, the divorce doesn't come to fruition until it is signed by a judge, and to my knowledge, it hasn't been signed by a judge.
And was she named on the, I know you said she wasn't on the note, but do you know if she was on the deed, on the title of the property?
She was not.
Okay, so if they're still legally married, then her marital interest is still intact with regard to that property. But as soon as they're divorced, though, that would be severed. And since she's not on the note and not on the deed, there wouldn't be any interest there remaining.
Okay, so they have to officially be divorced, not just sort of divorced.
That's correct. Unless they, you know, I don't know, maybe since he bought it himself and was the only one on the loan and on the deed, maybe he had a free trader agreement in place. But otherwise, yeah, her marital interest would be severed once the divorce is finalized.
So I only have to foreclose on him.
That sounds like it if they have an official divorce, yeah?
Okay, very good. Well, I appreciate your information.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Appreciate you listening, David. Take care. 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. What about how to mess up a closing? Or, of course, you guys try to mitigate all that, but, you know, if there's work that's been done that's not been paid for yet.
Yeah, so sellers are always going to be required at closing to sign a lien waiver. So basically what you're stating there is that you haven't had any work done on the property in the last 120 days that isn't already paid for in full. And the reason for that is, you know, if you got, you know, some work done to your roof a month before the closing and you hadn't paid it yet, nothing may show up on title, no liens against the property, but the contractor still has time up to 120 days after the work's completed to place that lien against the property, so it could end up getting put on there after the closing's already taken place.
Hmm. We don't want that.
No. Nope.
So that waiver puts it back on the seller.
That's correct, and that's why we would have them attest to that.
Okay. I was telling you about insurance. One of the things that we do is we always have the buyer go out and run what's called a CLU report, CLU. It's like a credit report on a house, and that will give us a good indication of any previous claims or number of claims on a piece of property, fire claim, water claim, roof claim, etc., that could drive the premium up on that particular house. So sometimes a lot of people get surprised when they get to closing and their quote seems double normal, and then they find out, well, there were three water claims on that house for a burst pipe. Well, that could drive the cost up. So, interesting thing. And then coming to closing with a bag of cash could actually delay your closing.
Yeah, you know, if you have to bring funds to closing, if it's anything over $1,000, we're going to be requiring a wire just so that we can get those funds verified same day so we can get you on record and not have to wait for those to clear the account.
Not a third-party certified check from Walmart?
No.
Sorry, George. All right. One of the things that we have seen, Josh, that have done it is when we've done that final walkthrough, the repairs have not been done that were agreed to. We see that more often than not. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, when there is an issue, a lot of times it's repairs that were not agreed to. We typically require that the seller brings receipts so we know that the work has been done. But my big thing is always, I really don't want the seller doing the repairs. I would rather come up with a cash negotiation so there's never an argument, never a question, and that is never on the table. Another thing we see that delays a closing is leaving the house a mess. We had a particular situation where a seller, when we did the final walkthrough, they had left a lot of things behind. The backyard was filled with dog remnants, and the garbage cans were completely full to the level that no human being on earth could even roll them without help of a tractor. and just left the stove looking like they, you know, were doing lab experiments. So we didn't close. And, you know, but it was amazing how fast they got that cleaned up. You know, it just always do that walkthrough. And I talked about that earlier today. I've seen it sometimes where one of those liens have popped up, a second, that was not accounted for, and they didn't have enough money in the proceeds, nor did they have enough money to close.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation, but sometimes sellers will need to bring funds to closing, and if it's not something that they're anticipating, a lot of times that can, you know, lead to the deal falling apart if they're not able to come up with that money.
Yeah, and last is a survey. You know, discovering encroachments. All of a sudden, the survey comes in at the last minute, and you find out that that fence is not yours, and it belongs to the neighbor, or that the neighbor put a shed on your property, you know, that you didn't think was theirs, you know, and it, or you thought it was yours, and it's theirs. And so a survey is pretty important.
Yeah, those issues are very common with, you know, regard to fences and sheds. It's pretty rare to run into anything more major than that, but we're always going to recommend that you get a survey on any single-family home. You don't really need them on condos or townhomes because you're really just, you know, buying the walls in. You're not really concerned with what's going on with the land there.
Exactly. Yeah, surveys are important. That's why you have a survey waiver. If they're not willing to do it to protect you and me both, they've waived their rights related to encroachments, not just with the title company, but with us too. I like that. I always do a survey, though. All right, well, we'll be right back. Stay with us, 704-570-1110, the show Your Real Estate Today. Don't go away. We've got more to come. We're going to talk about buying houses versus other forms of investments, and we're going to talk about things that you can do to your home that bring more money. 704-570-1110. Stay with us. The show Your Real Estate Today. We'll be right back. Welcome back. The show Your Real Estate Today. Boy, the sidebar discussions are getting pretty good, aren't they? Yeah. The show Your Real Estate Today. Paul Jamison, your host here with Josh Lippick with the Costner Law Firm. This show, if you're just tuning in, is about real estate. So don't sit there and wonder. We've still got another segment to go, so you're welcome to call in 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. So feel free to give a call. All right, so I thought it was important. I think you all know that one of my lanes is I work a lot in investment and with investment real estate. Of course, if you're interested in my book, it's called Opportunity is Knocking. Available either on Amazon Prime or certainly at the website Paul Jamison, Jamison with an I, .com. If you're interested in real estate investing and like a good overview of what that looks like and what it could be for you, I encourage you to pick up the book. But one of the things I've always been very strong on, I get asked the question all the time, what about commercial real estate versus residential? And here's my thing. I think that people will always need a place to live and they won't always need a place to work. And I think that whether the economy is good and inventory is tight or whether the economy is not as strong as we would like it and we're seeing a downturn, the rental market has consistently performed in either one of those areas. And single family works the best in my view, all right? Because it is the easiest to resell. It is typically surrounded by owner occupants in most neighborhoods. It appreciates stronger and faster than other forms of investment real estate. Personally, I prefer ranch houses. I'm a ranch guy. I think it offers more flexibility for an aging population, as well as we see a lot of single parents prefer a single level home. And, you know, although you could argue that in a two level home, you want, it gives you more degree of separation from your kids, ranch homes give access in a much easier way. And also in residential neighborhoods, if you have a rental, your neighbors like to spy on you more. All right. The cons of single-family homes are when it's vacant, It's 100% unoccupied. And a lot of HOAs, if you're in an HOA, aren't as renter friendly as they should be. Those are the two major things. But I am a big proponent of houses. I think they're much more stable and much safer. They're in good, solid supply. You typically get a better caliber of a tenant, I think. And if you have cash, you have a much easier time purchasing. And I laugh about my multi-unit story. I have a client that has a fiveplex, so five units in one building, and they share a ventilation system. Well, one of the tenants liked to smoke cannabis. And since it was a shared ventilation system, everybody in the building smoked cannabis too. So, you know, I think it's, and in order to catch the guy, you know, you got to, you have to actually catch them in the act of doing it. So people would call the police, but if he wasn't doing it at the time, you couldn't do anything about it. It was interesting, but they live close to a grocery store, so it worked out. Okay. All right. So here are things that buyers will pay more money for. I found this particularly interesting. So, Josh, feel free to chime in if you would pay more money for these things in your house. Double ovens. I will add to that that at least one should be a convection. All right.
I've never needed another one, but
yeah,
I've never hosted Thanksgiving dinner either. So
yeah, okay. White cabinets, you know, I see that, but you know, some people do like a pop of color, but white is popular right now. I'll give it that. Islands with seating in the kitchen. You know, where do most people hang out when there's a party? The kitchen. Okay, a walk-in pantry. Yeah, you know, you can keep more supplies in there. This was according to a national survey. New flooring. I kind of get that. And I will tell you, carpet, you know, is of course very popular, but now the hard surface flooring, the LVP, the luxury vinyl plank, people like that, especially if you have pets. It makes it really easy to keep clean as well as keep the dander and dust and things down. Double vanities in the bathroom.
That's a big one.
I kind of see that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Main level suite for parents or the kids you can't get rid of.
Just don't want to come back.
What's the statistic? 40% of your grown kids are going to come back? That'll scare you. But a main level suite, I see it a lot where you want the flexibility, if your parents come to stay, to have a bedroom with its own bath there. It's a nice convenience. I get that. A drop zone. So when your kids come home or you come home, a place to throw all your junk, hang your stuff, your coat, your briefcase, dump your keys, all that kind of thing. Butler's pantry. I didn't quite think about that. We never used our butler pantry. I don't know. It's that area off the dining room, you know, where there's sometimes a sink and where you keep all the wine glasses and the booze and stuff.
I think if it was a wet bar, maybe I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't have a butler. So, okay. A private yard. Now, this I get. I'm going to take it one step further. If the yard is seen as an extension of the living space, I'll tell you, outdoor living space is really in right now. Taking a smaller home on the inside, but yet making the yard an extension of the inside, that is really, I'm seeing those trends more and more, that the landscapes or yardscapes are becoming not just a big business, but they're becoming a very popular item for homes in resale.
Yeah, and where we are, it's mostly year-round. For use.
Yeah. Yeah, so with the exception of like 1 or 2 weeks out of the year.
Yeah.
Right? Office nook. Eh, I don't know about that. It's like a junk drop place, but I guess. If you want to pay your bills in your kitchen. All right. And a shower bench. Okay. I can deal with a shower bench. Now, I know that I've heard that if you want to shave your legs, and I'm very obvious, I never have, that's a nice thing to have. So yay for that. I would add to that that if you have a shower that has a very low riser where you can, if you're having some issues, either to get a wheelchair or a walker or something into the shower, that's highly desirable. Especially in the master bedroom, gives you an extended use. I'm going to add a few more that I see. Private space for office or kids away from the main area, where the noise doesn't carry, like a basement or a bonus room, right? So I like that. A three-car garage. I see that people really like the three-car garage.
Well, I think that's because a lot of times a two-car garage becomes a one-car garage when you need that storage space.
Oh, I know it. I see a lot of people put a ping pong table in their third-car garage. So, last two things, a really big honking fridge. People like those. And last, high ceilings. High ceilings just make any space look more desirable. All right, Josh, if people want to chat with the Costner Law Firm or catch up with you, how do they do it?
Yeah, just give me a call. My phone number is 704-620-2529.
620-2529.
That's correct.
All right. And you can reach us anytime at 846-DONE, 846-3663, or on the web at myjamesonhomes.com. God bless. Talk to you next week.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench, everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.